Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we loved them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest, and I've felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Some of y'all never been down south too much, so I'm going to tell you a little story so's you'll understand what I'm talking about. So's yo? Is that how we talk down here?
Yikes. Close.
This is... I'm trying to assimilate. This is Wretched Radio. If you live above the Mason-Dixon line and you've been toying with the idea of visiting us in the land of Dixie, I'm telling you, I got one more reason for you to come on down. Huntsville, Alabama. Wow. If a city, if you had to choose one town that you could actually eat a meal off of, I'm just telling you, Huntsville, Alabama. Pristine. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's a lovely sized town. My favorite sized town, about 200,000. It's 228,000 in Huntsville, Alabama, which makes it now the number one largest, I think that's redundant, largest city in the state of Alabama. Huntsville, because of all of its space stuff. I don't want to get all, you know, technical with the numbers and math and science terminology, because that would just make me look really smart. But I'm telling you, that town, whoever is running that place, they got it going on. And it seems to me there's even lessons we can learn from a well-run city. When the town is esteemed, people take care of it better. When more people take care of it better, even more people take care of it better. Even in the parts of town that you could drive through where you could tell on the socioeconomic ladder, it wasn't like the rich part of town. No graffiti. So in other words, it wasn't like Europe. No graffiti. The lawns, I did not see an unmowed lawn. I'm not kidding. We drove around a bit. I did not see a messy, dumpy part of town. Now, maybe it's got them. But I'm just telling you, I didn't see them. And there's a district called Trickenham. That's the name of one of its founders. I think it was a water spring that put Huntsville on the map. It is an old houses go back to the 1800s. So I guess Victorian era. Although I think the Summit Avenue, the Grand Hill District in St. Paul is more Victorian in flavor. I have never seen a historic district where every single home was meticulous. I saw one flaw. We walked it. I saw one flaw. It was in front of the house of the second governor of the state of Alabama. It was a wrought iron fence. And one of the slats was bowed a little bit. That's it. What I saw, it was loverly. So if you dig things like botanical gardens, walking around historic district and science stuff, you'll love to visit Huntsville, Alabama, which is what I learned is the way to pronounce it. So you've got like Greenville. I think it's interesting. Greenville has become so busy. Huntsville, it was so odd. We were there on Friday night. And it was like there were people walking around, but it felt more like Mayberry RFD than it did New York City. We were so pleasantly surprised. So to Alabama specifically, whoever is running Huntsville, I say salute. Jimmy, you ever been to Huntsville?
Years ago, yes.
I was really knocked out, telling you. With a lack of graffiti alone, I don't know when the last time was. You've seen a movie that was filmed in France or Italy. All of their glorious buildings, all graffitied, just letting people spray paint their ideas. Apparently, it's some sort of freedom of speech nonsense they've got going on where they're destroying their own culture. Huntsville, I'm telling you, they're holding on to it. And it was a thing of beauty, and we rushed to get back home on Saturday. Why? Because last time I missed church at our church, I felt out of sorts. It's not like I was devastated for the week, but not being in our own home church, I was like, why do I feel off this week? What did I not do or did I do this week that made me feel different? And the answer was, we weren't in our own church. So we came back. We could have spent another lovely day in Huntsville seeing more stuff, all the sciencey, spacey sort of stuff. But we rushed home and wow, am I glad we did, because Jason preached. Jimmy, I'm telling you, Psalm 88. It is a psalm that if you just read it casually, it'll just plain bum you out. Because when you read all of the Psalms of Lament, there's like 60 some Psalms of Lament where the psalmist is expressing he's bummed, which, as we were reminded on Sunday morning, is indeed an affirmation that God deals with our emotional issues rather exhaustively in the Bible, that he doesn't shy away from revealing to us that theological giants, the greats of the faith, like David, lamented, had issues and struggles. They actually did have struggles. It's not like the social media struggles that we think that we have. These are actual struggles, and they had actual challenges and familial issues and cultural and economic issues. And the Bible is happy to reveal it, and it should encourage us. God allows that stuff to be in there so that we can find a real source to guide our emotional responses to the challenges that we have, whether it's inside of our doors or outside in the world. The Bible hits it head on, and it always shows hope. It resolves the lament with, but I will think about these things. That's key, the thinking part. If you're feeling pressure, you got to have knowledge get in there. And so the Psalms inevitably will say something like, I'm super bummed out, but, and then it offers a theological truth, which changes our hearts. But, okay, consider Psalm 73, a Psalm of Asaph. I looked around and I saw these rich people like in the Trickenham district in Huntsville, Alabama. And I thought, man, they got it so sweet. It is, by the way, even that's a bit of a deception. When we were walking through Trickenham, Freo, we're not going back to Alabama again. We're walking through Trickenham, and there was a guy, and he was weeding his flowers that he had planted in the front of his house. Really just sweet home. And it was the owner. And we started chatting with him, and he was talking about how much work and how much money it is to keep the place looking adorable, because that was the word Mrs. Friel used to describe the home. It takes, and out there he is outside in Alabama sun, and it was a little bit moist, sweating up a storm to make sure the property looked right. Now, I appreciate that, but it reminds us that when you see something that looks great on the outside, it ain't all just, oh, wouldn't that be amazing to be sitting on that porch sipping some lemonade with a fan blowing on you in the middle of Trickenham in Huntsville, Alabama. It's never what it seems. There's more behind it. It takes a lot of work, and there's still problems aplenty inside of the home. Don't be deceived by social media. It is perpetually lying to you. That really great meal that they had, oh, they're dancing at a party. Look at the wedding decorations. Let me tell you about the amount of sin that went into all of it. It's never quite as amazing as an image appears. And the Bible helps us to get that. Psalm 73, the dude is looking at the wealthy and he's going, oh, they don't have any issues. But then, and he turns a theological corner. I went into the house of the Lord and he thought about God and he thought about the end of the wicked rich people. Now there's righteous rich people, but he's talking about these people They don't care about God. They just care about themselves and they profit. And I realized their end. And suddenly I didn't feel so bad. That's the pattern, except for Psalm 88. It's nothing but a great big bummer. It's just, I'm underwater here. I'm going down. I have no friends. I am totally in misery. The end. Sunday, Jason Allen, he directs our Fortis Fellows here, filled the pulpit at Alpharetta Bible Church, because I don't know if I told you, but I was in Huntsville, Alabama, for a really nice place. And he brought out the hope that is even buried inside of that thorough psalm of lament. Then what did he do? He pointed it toward the one who really did feel all of those things more than we do, Jesus Christ. That psalm could have been recited by Jesus because of what he endured on our behalf so that we can have hope, so that we don't have to feel abandoned, so that we never feel lonely or afraid. Jesus takes care of our Psalm 88 laments. That is what even an Old Testament sermon should be about. Jesus Christ. Question, what was your sermon about on Sunday? This is Wretched Radio.
You know what's remarkable? Currently, right now, at this present time, there are over 4 million podcasts in production. And something unexpected has happened. Fortis Institute's podcasts have quietly climbed the charts, all of them in at least the top 5% of all podcasts worldwide, 3 of them in the top 2%. Now, we're not here to shout from the rooftops about rankings. We're actually here because truth matters. For 25 years, we've been steadfast. First as Wretched Radio, then as Gospel Partners Media, now standing firm as Fortis Institute. Todd Friel, Adam Tyson, Brad Bigney, Greg Gifford, John Krotz, Libby Gloss, and real teachers addressing real issues. And you can find it all on the Fortis Plus app. Completely free. Hundreds of hours of content already there. Absolutely free. Download it, use it, share it, and then partner with us at fortisinstitute.org because we truly believe the church deserves better. fortisinstitute.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke? Or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
You remember when you first discovered solid biblical teaching? It was the moment when the door swung open and everything changed in your life. What if we could fling those doors wide open for everyone, everywhere? That's why we launched a brand new initiative, Truth Unhindered. It's going on right now. Later this year, we're unveiling something unprecedented, something that will revolutionize how pastors access seminary-level teaching, how families discover biblical counseling, how seekers find answers. But here's the thing. Great visions, well, they require great partners, and that's why we need you now more than ever before. Through June 30th, every dollar you give will be doubled through our matching grant, up to $250,000. That's not just giving, it's multiplication. Your gift today becomes transformation tomorrow. Visit fortisinstitute.org/truth before June 30th, because truth, well, it was never meant to have barriers. fortisinstitute.org/truth.
Revelation. General revelation is God's act of making himself known through his creation. A part of general revelation is the sensus divinatus, a sense of the divine. God has given every person an undeniable awareness of his existence. There are no true atheists. only revels in denial of what every person knows to be true. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hey, did I mention I was just in Huntsville, Alabama? This is Wretched Radio. I'm taken by the place. I'm telling you, Greenville, South Carolina, groovy town. There was some leadership there. There was some vision there. Hey, the bones are still good. Let's make this a place that is vibrant and vital. And now it is in Greenville. Like, really vibrant. Like, lots of people. Huntsville could even be cleaner if that is possible. Different vibe than Greenville. It's just, you know, it's got a different texture to it. But it is so well maintained. And everything appeared to be orderly and no graffiti and no broken windows, which I suspect is because they have a broken windows sort of mentality to crime. The whole place, as best I could tell, and we did a fair amount of driving around, it was nice. It was even cleaner, than Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was very pristine. So if you're looking for great places to visit, Chattanooga's awesome. You have Greenville, terrific. But now we got Huntsville on our list. And salute to the people who are actually enforcing laws. Everybody benefits from it. And then we returned home to be treated to a banquet, a sermon based on Psalm 88 that was Thankfully, Jason didn't try to tackle the whole thing because I know a guy who preached on Sunday, all of Genesis 3. Can you imagine preaching? Oh, wait a second. That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did he do it?
Did you
read the whole chapter?
Yep, sure did. In 45 minutes.
Yeah, it took you 45 minutes to read the chapter, but what about the sermon?
Yeah. No, the whole thing, 45 minutes.
Okay. Did you read it well? I suspect you did.
Did I read it well?
You're a pro.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of times we read the Bible. I've seen, you know, public reading of it. And we don't read it well.
We don't read it with emphasis.
I agree.
Yeah, no. I did that. I didn't do this time since I was preaching the entire chapter. I didn't do a reading beforehand. That's usually the first thing I do.
Oh, you just worked your way through
it. I worked my way through it, yeah.
Sure, that's valid.
Right.
You can do that. It depends on the format of your sermon. It depends on if you're going to teach through the text or if the text has offered, here are 3 points about this text.
Right.
Which I'm actually, I haven't done a 3-point sermon yet. I'm actually debating it.
Oh, you are?
For next Sunday. Uh-huh. Yeah. What I came up with, it's not very Southern Baptist-y. By the way, have they started their convention yet?
This Wednesday?
They do all the pre-stuff.
Right, yeah. I think the official thing starts Wednesday.
We'll be tracking it. And this particular non-alliterated 3-point was, I haven't got it quite worked out yet. But basically is they did, we do, he doesn't. And you say, what are we talking about? What's the subject of this verb here of they did, we do, and he doesn't? Forsake. It's the beginning of the passion. Jesus has left the upper room. He has moved to Gethsemane. He is in the place of the oil press and he is getting squeezed. And he informs Peter and everybody, y'all going to abandon me? You're all going to forsake me. And we saw that happen. All of them ran away. Now, John and Peter at least had the courage. We don't know the others, but John and Peter, they were willing to like check out what's happening here at the trial of Jesus. John, who knew apparently had kind of an in. So his inside contact got him into the courtyard. Peter was outside of it, warming himself by the fire. Even so, they had all scattered. They'd all forsaken Jesus. They did that. But don't be deceived. We do it. But what's the moral to this story? Jesus doesn't. Jesus doesn't ever turn his back on us. He doesn't ever forsake us. He doesn't ever say, yeah, I'll be with you. And then he drops the ball. They did. We do. He doesn't.
That's good.
So that's my 3-pointer.
That's good.
Right there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still going to work my way through the text.
You'll do that.
I just can't do it.
You'll do that every week from now on.
I just need to work on alliterating that. All right. So what was the big point of your Genesis 3 exposition?
So I focused more not on the curse itself or not on the sin itself, but God's patience.
Mm.
God didn't immediately after they sinned, he didn't immediately storm into the garden and cast judgment at that point. He came walking into the garden in the cool of the day, asking questions, and he gave space for repentance and confession. Of course, they didn't take that. And of course, the judgment comes. They start blame shifting and blaming each other. But I focused more on the patience because God's patience has a purpose.
And it feeds us to know that.
Right, yeah.
That he's patient with us. It reminds me, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we were in Ephesians 4 in Bible study, and one of our elders, Mike, was talking about some of the greats of the faith. That we aren't supposed to walk like we used to walk. That's what Ephesians 4 is about. Don't walk. You used to be a pagan. don't revert back to those ways. You're a new creation. Walk in that reality. And he cited some of the greats who failed in that regard. Consider Abraham. I mean, he had some like bad stuff. And he was not marked by that. And God did not esteem him as a faithless follower who failed him. He just doesn't see him that way. David, same thing. That these men, even though they biffed it big time, and we might be inclined to besmirch them and say, oh. I mean, honestly, if the Bible didn't tell you that David was a man after God's own heart, how would you write his epitaph? What would you say about it? You'd go, dude had it all and blew it. Probably. And he did. But that's just simply not how God presents him. He's still a man after his own heart. And that is the patience and the forbearance of God and the expansive nature of his salvific grace in Jesus Christ. We don't want to give license to sin, certainly. But we have to remember, Christians biff it. And they fall. They don't dive and swim. They stumble and fall. But even so, and even the Puritans recognize this, it could be a big nasty. And yet, there's church discipline to restore them into fellowship, to bring them back into the body of Christ, even if they've strayed. That is just a reminder. That's really baked into Matthew 18, isn't it? That you've got somebody, you've got a brother, professing brother, who's living in sin. You approach them, and if you win them back, they just come back into fellowship. It doesn't mean that now they got saved. They were saved. They were straying. They were a wandering sheep, and you go rescue that straying lamb, and they're restored to fellowship, even though they had been sinning in that way, because God's grace and his patience is staggering. All right, so Jimmy, I got a question for you now.
Okay.
You're in Genesis chapter 3, which is weird because I don't know who preaches from the Old Testament. Unhitched that a long time ago. How did you get to Jesus?
Well, Jesus is a part of the entire story.
All right, well, how did you get there?
How did I get there? It wasn't a leap.
Wait a second, you didn't preach the gospel?
I did preach the gospel.
Right, how'd you get there?
But I didn't have to leap there. He was ingrained in the whole thing.
Well, sure, he's Genesis 3:15.
Right, so, I mean, it's just a launching point from 3:15 on. Yeah, for sure.
Well, even the story sets up Jesus,
yeah.
Because that is the purpose of the planet, Jesus. Like, you want to answer the big teleological question, what's the point, Jesus? Oh, that's just a Sunday school answer. No, it's not. That's the Bible answer. Everything that you and I are doing, seeing, experiencing, tasting, thinking, all revolves around Jesus.
Yeah.
All of it. And not to become some sort of mystical, mindful Christian, but that is reality. And for the myriads of people, can you have myriads? The myriad of people, the lots of people, that want their faith connected to their entirety of their life, there's your key right there. Your faith already is. You're just not thinking about it. That's all. You're just not thinking about it. Received a follow-up. Jimmy, I don't know if you remember from last week, there was a, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, there was a question about decision-making. How do you make a decision? Well, the individual sent another email to me and said, hey, well, okay, cool what you said, but what about just like, do I pick up this paper? Do I drink this? Do I pick a Diet Coke or a Coke Zero? You shouldn't pick either. But how do I like, just do I need to like go through that 5-step process with everything? And the answer is no. Because the more you utilize the means of growth, reading your Bible, sermons, praying, Lord's table, fellowship, witnessing, baptisms, it's all that good stuff in, and then that's what comes out. And it just becomes very holistic and very natural. When you bake yourself in Bible, when you are aware constantly that everything about this planet is about Jesus, that will inform everything. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. The immigration enforcement standoff continues in Los Angeles. Mayor Karen Bass and Police Chief Jim McDonnell have publicly declared their allegiance to illegal aliens over American citizens. Both officials announced that they would refuse all cooperation with ICE operations, even as federal agents arrested over 40 people during raids at multiple downtown locations. The protests that followed tell you everything you need to know about the priorities of that city. The Department of Homeland Security didn't mince words, condemning city officials for spreading terror, while the FBI's deputy director made clear that protesters will not be allowed to interfere with federal operations. The resistance to basic law enforcement wasn't limited to California either, as a new study reveals over 1,000 jurisdictions across America now refuse to cooperate with immigration enforcement, nearly double the number since 2018. The Federation for American Immigration Reform found that 17 entire states plus Washington, D.C. maintain sanctuary policies that actively obstruct ICE operations. Those jurisdictions don't just ignore federal law, they prohibit officers from asking about immigration status, deny ICE access to jails, and in Colorado's case, even fund deportation defense for illegals with taxpayer money. The FBI is now asking Americans to report medical facilities still performing life-altering gender procedures on confused children following President Trump's executive order cutting federal support for such practices. 25 states already banned these procedures, but the Bureau's public appeals signal serious federal enforcement is coming. Of course, the ACLU immediately complained that asking citizens to protect children creates fear and confusion. Yeah, because I guess mutilating kids under the guise of healthcare shouldn't make anyone fearful or confused. Speaking of child protection, Park Ridge, Illinois just hosted a pride event where drag queens danced seductively in front of small children while encouraging them to hand over dollar bills. The mayor endorsed the spectacle along with several local churches that apparently don't read their Bible. Yeah, when churches start celebrating the sexualization of minors, it's clear those aren't churches at all. In sports news, leaked medical reports confirm what everyone with functioning eyes already knew. The Algerian boxer who competed in the Olympics was actually a biological male. And as J.K. Rowling noted, the gender activists who made sex testing seem bigoted are just as culpable as the IOC for this travesty. Finally, a 334-pound man is suing Disney for $50,000 after exceeding the 300-pound weight limit on a water slide and getting injured at exhilarating speeds. That's today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at fortisinstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Names of God. Is Jesus God? One name given to God in Scripture is El Gibor, the Mighty God. One occurrence of this name stands out. In Isaiah chapter 9, El Gibor is the name given to the promised Messiah. Jesus is that promised Messiah. He is God incarnate. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here's a horrible new trend. Human swiping. This is Wretched Radio. Admit it, you do it, I do it, we all do it, some more, some less, but we all swipe. You're looking at your cell phone, you don't like it, you swipe it. You're done with it, you swipe it. It doesn't give you a dopamine hit, you swipe it. And by the way, speaking of dopamine hits, and short attention spans. On the way back from Huntsville, Jimmy, I don't know if I mentioned we were in Huntsville, Alabama.
You were.
On the drive back, Mrs. Friel said, oh, we've got to listen to this interview that Tucker Carlson did with a woman. That's right. I don't know her name. It was 2 hours and like 20 minutes long. Wow, it was long. And I'm telling you, the drive from Huntsville to Atlanta, lovely. And even the roads. Alabama, what are you doing there? Because the roads were sweet. We listened to Tucker Carlson interview a woman who, at the age of 13, looking in the mirror, didn't like what she saw. She saw that somehow she wasn't really in control of her life. She came from a very rich part, I think like Connecticut, something like that, in the Hamptons. And she was competitive and she was pushed and driven, get good grades, compete in sports. And at the tender age of 13, she looked in the mirror and she just felt like, I'm kind of detached from my own body. And so what happened? She goes to an expert, a professional, who immediately puts her on a cocktail of drugs to help her feel better. And this went on for years for this young lady. She graduated, by the way, from Harvard. So this was not a dumb woman. She was quite intelligent, quite studied, and she was on medication. And she talked about how suicidal she was and how depressed she was and how numb she was. And the conversation continued, and Tucker Carlson was shocked. Well, tell me about, so how did you get this disease? Did you walk by somebody and they sneezed on you and you got a mental illness? How did you get it? And because he was staggered when she said there's no scientific testing behind any of these diagnoses. And he's like, wait a second, none at all? It was the first time apparently that he heard it because he hadn't read Greg Gifford's book, Lies My Therapist Told Me. Available at fortisinstitute.org/lies or wherever you buy books. And it's doing great, by the way. I hope you are being blessed by Lies My Therapist Told Me by one of our fellows, Greg Gifford. He tackles that subject, that there's no scientific testing that takes place. She said she went to a doc complaining, saying, you know, this is how I'm feeling. First time, writes her a script. As at the peak of her reliance on these medications, 5 different drugs. And it was a really fascinating interview, but the entire time I'm screaming, get Greg Gifford on! You need to talk to Greg Gifford, because Tucker kept saying, well, this had to affect you, like relationally, yeah, and spiritually. So he started to grope into the realm of, you know, where's God in all of this? And what does this do to the human brain and to our thinking? And he was wanting to know what's an alternative to this? And what they ultimately concluded was, you know, getting rid of all of the pressure and just doing more human type things. Oh, okay. You know, you couldn't argue with it, but it didn't get to where it needed to go. They were talking about how medication doesn't deal with the actual issue. And I'm like, yeah, we've been talking about this for years in biblical counseling. There's a root and then there's fruit. And I thought, oh, Tucker needs a copy of Lies My Therapist Told Me, because these two, I'm grateful that she's off of all of her medication. She seems to be doing well. She's married, kids. So, you know, this human flourishing appears to be happening in her life now, and it's maybe her mid-30s. But it didn't go far enough. You got to figure out what's driving it. And so often what is driving it, and did you notice? She stared in the mirror at the age of 13. What happens around the age of 13? Oh, puberty. Imagine a young girl not thinking that she measured up when she looked inside of the mirror. And cell phones contribute to that. Social media contributes to that. A school, TV shows all says you gotta be and look a certain way. And when kids look at it and they realize they don't measure up, they just get bummed. I've been reading a number of studies on social media just within the last 24 hours. Okay, hold on. Okay, Okay, here you go, right here. This is from, I don't know who wrote this. More Than Addiction, How Screens and Social Media Reshape Our Minds. Screens, particularly those used during early childhood, can fundamentally alter brain development, shorten attention spans, and disrupt emotional and social growth. I would add spiritual. It numbs you. It stunts you. From ages 0 to 6, a child's brain is very, of course it's sensitive. It's in developmental mode. The way it learns to process the world is through sensory input. So touch and movement, sound, taste, facial expressions, eye contact. Screens provide artificial stimulation that floods the brain and doesn't allow it to develop the capacity to tolerate boredom or process subtle cues. In other words, these screens are messing with our brains. And it goes into talking about adults, but it's focusing on kids. And here's what happens every time I read one of these studies and reports on the effects of social media. My brain tends to jump to, ooh, this is going to be a mess when these kids get old. No, they've already gotten old. We've already got a generation, maybe two, that were raised on social media with a screen in front of their face. And it is already affecting them. And that is why 65 million people are medicated in this country. I'm not kidding. The number of 65 million people are medicated, probably more, because I think that stat goes to 2022. Because their brains have been designed and trained unnaturally. They've been trained by something electronic, and we've never seen this before. And we're starting to see the effects, and we don't have to wait for another generation. We're already seeing it. Young children, when they become used to the fast-paced, highly stimulating content on screens, their nervous system struggles to adjust to real-life situations. Now, this is so fascinating. And if you've read Greg's book, and if you've been listening to my interviews with Greg, you're going to go, there it is again. From this article, they enter classrooms expecting the same kind of excitement they get from a screen. And when they don't get it, when they're forced to sit still, when they're forced to do work that they're not excited about, what do? They disengage. And that's when we see attention disorders. And that is when these kids are getting diagnosed with medication because they just can't seem to plug in. They just can't seem to focus. We wonder why. Screens program the brain to seek fast, frequent rewards. Real life meaning doesn't work like that. It's slow, cumulative. It requires effort. But when kids get used to bang, bang, bang being rewarded, too sweet, they lose motivation for more meaningful tasks that take time and effort. That affected that young woman. It is affecting millions of kids right now. This article goes on to suggest, this is what you should do. You should try to start working on limiting screen time. I'm starting to get more persuaded of a harder line opinion, which is never hard for me to do. This article recommends, this expert from the article, ages 0 to 2, avoid screen time entirely. If necessary, only with adult supervision. It's never necessary. Like a kid's going to die if they don't get screen time. But the kid is going to drive a bus over the cliff if he doesn't get screened. There's never a need for it. Ages 3 to 6, their recommendation is 60 to 90 minutes per day. I say I would stick with 0. Elementary school, they recommend 2 hours daily should be the max. I say 0. Teens and adults, no hard time limit, but pay close attention to the type of content and how long they're spending on it. Look, I get it. It's harder with teenagers, but this article makes it clear this affects adults too. That adults get the same sort of impact. And they were talking about when you go on a long drive, what do? The passenger, the kids in the back, nobody's sitting and thinking. Nobody's counting the stripes, the little markers on the highway. I remember doing that when we drive from St. Paul to Chicago. I would try to count the number of whatever those stripe, it's a stripe, Friel. Just stick with stripe. I would count them just to keep out. Okay. Not anymore. Give me a screen. I'd look high and low for any semblance of a hill, any sort of any sort of topography that was interesting, because the ride from St. Paul to Chicago is a little bit of a snoozer. But you had to think, or you even daydreamed. And we don't even do that anymore as adults. It's affecting our sleep. It's affecting how we view the world, how we view ourselves. And now, guess what? We are seeing it on university campuses, where we are now practicing what I am calling human swiping. Next on Wretched Radio.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a dollar today doesn't go near as far as it used to. It might buy you a soft drink, but what if your dollars could multiply? For 25 years, our gospel partners have been watching their giving multiply. Every month, their faithful support transforms into college campus evangelism, biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And when you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, understand this. You're not just giving money. You're preaching the gospel to a student at Georgia Tech. You're discipling the young man struggling with pornography. And you're equipping a pastor in a small rural church. And the work, it's nowhere near finished. The fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership makes it all possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org, because when faithful people give faithfully, the gospel advances powerfully. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel. So if we were going to be honest with one another, we would have to admit that every day our phone buzzes with celebrity scandals and political outrage and notifications of TikTok trends, all the stuff that doesn't matter. But what if your phone could deliver something different? Because it can. Meet Fortis Plus. If you haven't already downloaded it yet, I want to urge you to take that opportunity right now. It's free and it will replace noise with nourishment. Picture this, 7 new pieces of content every single day. And I'm not talking clickbait or gossip. I'm talking real truth for real life. The app is already full of hundreds of hours of content. Again, completely free. And when I say free, I mean free. I don't mean hidden costs and temporary trials and premium tiers. No subscription traps at all. Because while everyone else all over the world is selling you something, we are giving something away. Fortis Plus. Download it right now where you download your apps, or just go to fortisplus.org, because what feeds your mind shapes your life. The world says you're broken, a victim of chemical imbalance, just another diagnosis and a long list of mental health labels. But what if they're wrong about you? What if there's a completely different perspective? Dr. Greg Gifford, a Fortis Institute fellow, is challenging everything you've been told about mental health. In our exclusive forum, Psychology versus Scripture, The Truth About Mental Health, Dr. Gifford will reveal why the Bible never describes anxiety, depression, or emotional struggles as diseases, but instead offers a framework of sin, suffering, and sanctification. You're not defined by psychiatric terminology, and there is a path to true transformation that medication alone cannot provide. Join us for an eye-opening Fortis Forum that will help you break free from worldly definitions and find lasting peace in Christ. You can watch this Fortis Forum, available right now for free at fortisplus.org. That's fortisplus.org. Your journey to true transformation begins right now.
Know your reformers. William Tyndale provided the first complete translation of the New Testament into English in 1526. While he was in prison for the crime of translating the Bible, he continued to translate the Old Testament until he was strangled and burned at the stake in 1536. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Before you totally cut yourself off from social media, this is Wretched Radio. If you visit fortisinstitute.org/truth, you'll find all the deets on our matching gift campaign that is going on right now in an effort to help us close the store and give away all of our resources. We give away 90% of our stuff, the other 10% now, the big stuff, the TV series, the Bible studies. We want to give it all away electronically. We're just going to start sending it out around the globe to nations where it's much more difficult to come up with the fees for buying it. No, we're not going to sell it anymore. We're going to give it away. And in order to, well, keep the lights on, I need to somehow replace that revenue. So we're trusting God's people. If you do not have any sort of unmanaged debt, to let us close the store, reach more people, give more stuff away, get into more churches, good, bad, or otherwise. It's truth unhindered. If you'd kindly consider helping us with our match gift campaign, we're getting super close to meeting it. So thank you to everybody who has given. FortisInstitute.org/truth. And once you finish that, get off the internet! Well, okay, at least get it under control, because it appears all of these studies, at least for the kids, and it's not helping us. It's affecting our posture. It affects us how are our muscles, what did they call it in this article that I was just reading? The skeletal muscular, it, like, your body doesn't like develop the way that it should because you're just sitting there with your neck craning toward a TV or a little screen. And by the way, this was interesting because I've heard some people retort, hey, well, didn't we used to just sit around and watch TV? And the answer is yes. But even in these people who are experts now on the effects of social media say that's a different experience. That's not the same thing as a screen where you can swipe and swipe and swipe and swipe, which now has translated into human swiping. This was a fascinating, sad article written by one Pamela Paul. The notice of no contact order landed in May's inbox on February 15th, 2022. It was stern and lawyerly and contained a bulleted list of prohibited behaviors between May, who is a Tulane freshman, and her former roommate. No approaching each other at any time. No communicating through third parties. No social media interactions whatsoever. It was a directive from Tulane's Division of Student Affairs. Was, quote, based on the right of every Tulane community member to avoid contact with another community member if such contact may be harmful or detrimental. And the question, of course, is what's harmful or detrimental? And that's precisely the problem. What is harmful and detrimental is deemed by a generation that has swiped their way through life is anything that doesn't bring them pleasure, anything that agitates or annoys them. They now feel unsafe. That's the word, unsafe. And what happens when a student complains about another student to mom and dad contact the faculty and say, my child feels unsafe. And in our litigious society, the school says, oh, we got to make sure the kid feels safe. What's the issue? Well, their roommate's kind of a pain in the neck. All right, we'll send a cease and desist. And it's being used for virtually everything. And this is, I think, the fruit of kit swipe, 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 swipe. My entire social media life is curated by me. And now you get into a university setting. You've got roommates. You've got fellow students. You've got to work on projects together. You've got more team activities going on. And you don't get to swipe. Well, guess what? They're using no contact orders for human swiping. A Tulane spokesperson said no contact orders are most often used in cases where there is interpersonal conflict that has escalated to the point of disrupting one or both students' studies. All very subjective. This is all about boundaries and borders. Hey, you got to put boundaries around people. That person bothers you, you got to put a boundary around that person. I think that Libby Glosson, I think we're either going to do a lengthier treatment of that together. She's one of our Fortis fellow Etzes. We're going to talk about this issue of boundaries, fencing people out of your life to keep yourself safe. Roommate disputes, ruptures between friends, relationship issues. You know how we used to deal with that? Okay, you sit here, you sit there. Let's work through this. All right, shake hands. Let's move on and get back to business. And what inevitably, by the way, I shouldn't say inevitably, but what regularly happens with those disputes that get resolved face-to-face, those relationships actually become deeper and sometimes enemies become besties. Not anymore. Some schools' policies are so broadly phrased as to allow students to request no contact orders for a wide range of behaviors to minimize psychological harm, according to Bentley University, or unwanted contact or fear of unwanted contact or problematic interactions. Please note, we are not talking about physical assaults. sexual assaults. That's not in view here. As the article makes clear, this is handing out do not come near me order for just about anything, according to a professor of sociology who specializes in restorative justice and conflict resolution at the University of San Diego. Schools hand them out like candy. We generally know students are increasingly fragile and conflict averse, which leads to increased desire to request a no contact order. Administrators, adolescent psychologists, and sociologists describe Gen Z students as fundamentally different from earlier generations. Okay, fair enough. I think we think that about every generation, but I think fundamentally. So there have been radical changes. All right, what's the new component? Well, you've got a lot of abandonment of religion. I think a lot of touchstones for people are being destroyed and deconstructed. We don't feel connected to much. Everything is just a consumer mindset. We're not a part of a community. We live there, but only as it benefits us. And I think there's social, there's what we get taught through university. All of these issues have indeed changed kind of the fundamental way we process, think, and engage with the world in a more profound way than I think has ever happened, because every generation tends to complain about the prior generation. By the way, whatever your generation is, ask somebody a generation before you what they think about your generation. It's always a lament, but there does seem to be something different here. According to this article, many have difficulty with confrontation and little experience working through interpersonal conflicts. They've mastered the terminology of harassment and discrimination, and they just throw it all over the place. And young people can't interact face to face. The mindset is facilitated by online behaviors that enable kids from an early age to shut out people they dislike or disapprove of. Human swiping. That's what they're going to get to here. This generation of college students grew up in an echo chamber where they could block or filter out voices they disagree with. Swipe, swipe, swipe. Now you go to university and the professor gives you a bad grade, teaches something that you disagree with. Swipe, swipe, rate them poorly online. There's a student that kind of bugs you or just makes you even feel just somewhat like, I don't really care for that person. Swipe. It's an NCO. It's a no contact order, which is human swiping. They're bringing online communication norms to the real world. This is an individual. She's an associate professor at Teachers College at Columbia University. There's a kind of platform logic that's bleeding into campus life. Students are increasingly fluent in digital tools for managing boundaries like blocking, muting, curating their spaces. Can I just tell you, I'm feeling a moment of affirmation. I think this is much bigger than even this article indicates. This forms all of us. It makes us so inwardly focused. It cultivates a selfishness in all of us. It's not just those kids, it's all of us. Swipe, swipe, swipe. We get to mute, we get to curate our spaces, and no contact orders are sometimes seen as an offline extension of that, a way to formalize emotional or interpersonal boundaries through institutional means. And so you've got all of these issues swirling on campus where somebody, it's a different political bent, and somebody has a sign, it's a pro-life, whatever, and it's, they're just, it causes them to not feel safe. Where does that come from? My thesis? Social media. Now, granted, social media only helps cultivate and fertilize. It's there already. We do like everything our way. I get it. That's why Burger King is still in business. You can have it your way because you're the king. And we like that. And the kids are being fed that and affirmed that every single time they swipe. And the result, human swiping. Mom and dad, please take a look at that device that you're thinking about giving to your kid. Think long and hard before you let them become human swipers. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.